Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football and Garbage Time Podcast Super Bowl 50 Review and Breakdown Edition. Here again with me, Hakeem Wong, the editor-in-chief of Football and Garbage Time, and senior staff writer Ryan Whitfield. So, Ryan, did you enjoy Super Bowl 50 yesterday? Have you recovered from the wings and the beer?
I think I'm still trying to recover from what we were tweeting back and forth yesterday. I think we disagreed a little bit, but I'm recovering from that awful display of football yesterday. That was a waste of time for me.
Yeah, well, I have to say, at least I hope you had a good spread for the Super Bowl, because at least you had some. This is an excuse to eat as much food as you want. I always treat the Super Bowl that way, if it's not a team I care about. But you're right, the actual performances on the field were really, really subpar. So let's just get right to it, because we're going to cover this now and then talk about some of the ins and outs of this, but. You know what, getting this reaction now, because it's just such a, in my opinion, a little bit of a stunning result. The Panthers came in as 4.5-point favorites at the final line before the game started on Sunday, and they ended up coming out flat, not coming there to play. I'm sure a lot of people in Vegas lost prop bets over the Carolina Panthers offense, as they certainly didn't look anything like they did in the rest of the season. And the Denver Broncos surprisingly managed to pull this off 24-10 in spite of Peyton Manning. So let's get down to the game itself. Tell me, Ryan, what are your thoughts, initial thoughts about the game and its result?
Yeah, so I have three quick leadoff thoughts. I'll try to succinctly work through them here. The first one is, I think myself included, underestimated, and it's hard sometimes to get out of your centric view of things, of where you're from. And so the Patriots were playing so well at the beginning of the year that, I constantly heard in the media that, it's been a rough start to the season. There hasn't been a lot of great football being played. And I think for me out here in New England that, I don't get a lot of NFC games. I get about one a week. And then I get to see, the clips on the red zone, which doesn't give you a full accurate snapshot of everything. And I had really convinced myself that the three best teams in the NFL were in the NFC this year. The Seahawks, the Carolina Panthers, and the Arizona Cardinals. And what we found out last night is that not only is the NFC not very good, the league in general wasn't very good this year. There wasn't a real true dominant team. There wasn't there wasn't a great football team this year. As good as the Patriots looked at one point, and a lot of people around here want to blame injuries. They had a weak offensive line. They had some glaring holes. And, the Broncos, that was I think Manning's pass rating finished up around 56. And, that was, we had talked about last night. I referenced the Giants-Ravens Super Bowl. That was Trent Dilfer and Rob Johnson-esque last night. Or Brad Johnson, whatever Johnson was the one that led the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl. It wasn't great football. And I've heard, me and you went back and forth on it that, the Broncos defense played great, you thought. And I agree, they were great. But the Carolina Panthers fumbled the ball four times, lost three of them. They had the one pick and the four drops. And it's like, some of that might be the pressure getting to them, and some of that might be because they're under such, a blitz of, there's just that the extra tightness and extra stress when you're getting pounded like that and the other team's hitting you so hard. And some of it is just hold on to the damn ball. I watched Stephen Ridley here for 4 years, and nothing made me more frustrated with that kid for not holding on to the ball, because that's just such a mental thing. It's just you just prepare and you don't let the ball get taken out. It is so hard to knock the ball out of somebody who's actively trying to hold on to it. And so Carolina just wilted in the moment. That was one of my big takeaways. My second big takeaway from the game itself was you've heard me say it over and over again. My opinions on Von Miller in the big game. Von Miller shut me up the last 2 weeks, and I can't ever really say it again. So I will stop beating the Von Miller's overrated drum. I think he had been somebody who couldn't elevate in the past in those big situations, but the 2 week stretch, or 3 week I guess, but 2 week game time stretch he just had was absolutely insane. And then my third and final one, I'll throw it over to you here, was just the whole Cam Newton saga, you know, we haven't really talked about it because I try to stay away from real hot button issues when we're talking, not get too involved in some side
really,
stuff.
Really, you're trying to stay away from hot button issues? That doesn't sound like you at all.
Well,
come on.
From a political standpoint, but
right, okay,
you know,
that's fair.
Really, one of the things that's really angered me over the last month, and I've kind of bit my tongue on, was this new idea that if you don't like Cam Newton's dance, you just must be a racist. Coming from somebody who, you know me as a you know, a Tom Brady and Julian Edelman fan, but my favorite all-time, my two favorite all-time Patriots are Ty Law and the man who walked out on the field last night, Deion Branch. I wanted to name my child Deion Branch.
Yeah.
I love 83/84 was my all-time favorite Patriot. So, and you know, and his dances were eccentric. You know, if you go back and watch the Deion Branch highlights, that man would do some dances, but they weren't 15 seconds long. My problem's never been with Cam Newton dancing for dancing. It's been how long the dance was. The Superman dance didn't bother me. That stunt he pulled against the Titans this year, and you know, it's all good when you're winning and everything looks rosy and nice. But at the end of the day, I think my thoughts about Cam Newton got re-solidified yesterday, because I still had a question in my mind: had he really grown up and become a leader when you don't dive on the ball for that fumble or dive on the ground for that fumble? But then,
well, that was criminal.
And I'm not gonna take credit for this. Felger, Mike Felger from the local 98.5 Sports Hub radio show said today that, you know, it's interesting because everyone obviously saw when he's throwing himself on the ground after the Josh Norman holding play. And as Felger hilariously pointed out, it's too bad he didn't feel the need to dive on the ball or dive on the ground, you know, a few minutes before when there was an active ball that he had just fumbled in front of him.
right.
So he does that, and he was a child in that, and then the walk off during his press conference. I've heard the thing about the Chris Harris in the background and stuff. I mean, that's the Super Bowl. Those Super Bowls, they don't have these big dedicated media rooms. You're always next to the opposing team, which is a curtain in between. The fact of the matter is, if you're a quarterback, you're the CEO of your team, and you have to act like it. And what he did last night was disgraceful. It was embarrassing. And, you know, I'm sure the Stephen A. Smiths of the world and the Rob Parkers, if he's still anywhere out there, will try to cite that it's just racism. It's not racism. You know, it's being an adult. It's being a grown-up. And it's act like you've been there before when you scored. You know, again, you want to do the Superman celebration and then spike it, whatever. You want to dab, that's fine. But a 15-second dance routine, that just shows, you know, again, they say that it's his childish love of the game. And I think it's just his childishness. And, you know, last night in a big moment, he wilted, and Lord knows, I know he took as many hits as Brady did the week before. But I said the same thing about Brady last week. You know, if you go back to listen to our podcast, I thought Brady pouted in that game, and I thought Cam did too. You know, when your season's on the line, you don't have time to pout. You got to step up, you got to make the plays, take the pounding, and you're sure as hell going to dive on the ball when it's in front of you when there's 3 minutes left and you're down by six.
Yep. I totally agree with that, but let me take that one at a time. So let's go back to the Carolina Panthers offense, and whether, you know, how culpable were they for what happened in this Super Bowl as compared to the Denver defense. So I agree with you that that we were tweeting back and forth last night. The Carolina Panthers were sloppy. There's no doubt about it. They were sloppy, and I think that part of the problem was that we always knew that Ted Ginn had hands of stone, and he brought in 4 of 10 targets. That's actually good for him. And the problem is that, as we've seen over the playoffs at least, Corey Brown was the primary target besides Greg Olsen. And it was interesting to me to see that Denver took the chance of basically shadowing Greg Olsen of Aqib Talib. That was a very interesting move on their part, trying to make sure, take him out of the game, and it actually was successful. Now, Greg Olsen did get a couple, you know, managed to pull off a couple ones. He then had a nice 19-yard reception at one point. And Ted Ginn also had a 45-yard reception at one point. But ultimately, they shutting down Greg Olsen, Corey Brown getting injured with a concussion, really put the screws on Cam Newton, particularly with Jonathan Stewart. Now, I do believe that in some part of this, that Jonathan Stewart, you know, that injury he sustained, even though he came back 4 plays later, affected his ability to cut. He was running right into the pile. He was going left, right. He did not try to go outside. He didn't try to beat the ends. He didn't try to find the outside. He was 7 yards on 7 carries at the half. You know, it was a nice touchdown dive that he had, but really he had very little effectiveness between the tackles. And as you look statistically at what happens to Cam Newton when Jonathan Stewart isn't 100% healthy, he tends to go, you know, he tends to go into a hole a little bit if he doesn't have the middle of the field open to get the Greg Olsen. So I think that's the problem. I think ultimately what ended up happening is that they effectively removed his safety blanket. They effectively did not have to blitz because of the fact that the front four was getting so much pressure on him that they really created problems for Cam Newton, and he wasn't able to complete the passes that he wanted to. So I think there was sloppiness, but I think the sloppiness was in some ways induced by the fact that that Cam was under so much duress for a good part of the game. Now, that being said, you know, let's give credit where credit is due. I mean, they defeated themselves in some way, and the Denver Broncos played a great game. And going to your second part, Von Miller was out of his mind. I mean, he really was playing totally out of his mind, he deserved the MVP, no doubt about it. DeMarcus Ware again turned back time. He was as effective as I've ever seen him, more effective than I've seen him in many years. So clearly those two guys were exceeding all expectations. And finally, on Cam Newton, you know, I heard a little bit of a discussion about this on ESPN. You know, it doesn't really it bothers me a little bit. It doesn't bother me too much. I think Cam Newton is immature. I think that it's clear to me that the day of the Super Bowl, when they're doing a one-on-one on NFL Network, when they asked him about his preparation and all this other stuff, he started launching into, well, you know, why don't people ever talk about me being a great leader like Ben Roethlisberger? Why don't people or like Tom Brady? Why don't people talk about me being a great, having great football IQ like Peyton Manning? Why don't people talk about, you know, how good of a pocket passer or a scrambler I am like Russell Wilson? I mean, he basically became defensive, and I thought that was very immature. I mean, clearly he's too concerned about what people think about him, and that's a problem. So I think that's what I don't like about Cam Newton. I think he'll have to mature in order to become a better quarterback, a better leader. When he's having fun and everything's going fine, sure, it's great, but when adversity hits, it's clear that he crumbles, and that was exactly what happened last night. So I got to ask you, you know, now that now Von Miller there, Aqib Talib, okay, you had a couple. There was a couple other Denver Broncos that you didn't much care for either. But did the Broncos' offense show you anything that you thought was notable?
Well, we again reference one of our tweet exchanges. You know, and at the end of the show, everyone can check out our Twitter because me and you have some pretty good conversations during games. So for next year, you should definitely follow those.
Right. Absolutely.
But like I said last night, man. When it's cold or there's hitting going on, DT shrinks. And I don't know if anybody found Demaryius Thomas because I don't think I saw him out there last night. And, you know, I think we briefly touched on it leading into the Super Bowl about his performance in Super Bowl 48. And, you know, you referenced the stat line, which is, you know, indicated what the record for most yards in a Super Bowl that year. And, you know, on the surface, he had a really great game, except for there was that one play at I think it was the beginning of the third quarter where he comes across mm-hmm. the middle. He gets a nice, big, huge play. And then Cam Chancellor basically throws a limp arm in there and the ball gets knocked out and it's going the other way, and it killed any momentum
right.
Denver had in that game. And that's just who Demaryius Thomas is. And for me personally, you know, I like players with all heart, and I love Steve Smith. Because Steve Smith, I love when someone plays that chip on their shoulder. I love when someone goes out there and you know that, you know, you're going to have to cart them off the field before they ever come out. You know, the Julian Edelman hit from Cam Chancellor last year on the last drive where he takes that hit and he was down, but he still gets up and runs 20 yards and everyone in the world knows he was concussed. But, you know, I love all heart players like that. And that's not Demaryius Thomas. Demaryius Thomas has a big skill set. You know, I'll never deny, you know, the pure athletic ability. But for such a big guy, God, is he so soft. So, you know, as we said yesterday, minute Kuechly put that hit on him.
That was huge. You know, and if you look at it, actually, that hit, I think, defined everything because he caught that ball. And then he saw Kuechly coming, and he basically cowered in fear. I mean, that was just not a pro football move on his part. I was shocked by that one. I was absolutely shocked. You're an NFL player. You know, you're the number one wide receiver on your team. You got to hold on to the ball, and you know Keekly's there. You got to hold on to the ball when he comes. that was unforgivable.
Yeah,
I thought as well.
To use a hockey term, he turtled. He saw '59 coming across, and the neck started retracting, and the shell started to come up. But that was pretty predictable. I think you saw again. There was a little spurt there where it looked like Denver could run the ball, particularly mm-hmm. through like the first round of the playoffs and the last couple of games of the season. But you know, the Patriots defense shut them down. The Carolina shut them down last night. So if you have any kind of semblance of a real run stopping ability, that they're going to shut them down.
Right.
You know, and as much as one of the players you referenced, as much as I hate Emmanuel Sanders, he is a good player. And he is a gamer. He's the opposite of Demaryius Thomas. He might not have
right.
the same freakish build and the same athletic skill set as a pure like home run hitter, but he's a guy who'll give it his all. I don't know. Maybe it just comes back to the fact that the Patriots put out that awful offer sheet to him a couple years ago, and Pittsburgh retained him, and then he went to Denver instead of New England the year after, and I just haven't forgiven him for it. But you know, I find his first down a little bit snarly and what's the word for it? Pompous, you know, and throws me the wrong way. But again, that's probably a personal vendetta. But and then Peyton, I referenced it earlier. I think that was the lowest. Again, it's been such a whirlwind of a day with the snowstorm, but I'm pretty sure they said last night it was if not the lowest, one of the lowest total offensive productions for a Super Bowl winning team ever. So they were inept, and they. So I guess the real question is what everyone has to ask themselves now is, do we think that they broke the mold? Because it has been so long since we've seen a team with such bad quarterback play, and in this case, no running game, win a Super Bowl. Do we now start to believe again that it's just defenses win championships, or do you still need an elite defense and, a legit quarterback? Because it's been a long time since we've seen that. I think the closest was Russell Wilson, but that year was the year that Russell Wilson started to really kind of emerge, and Percy Harvin was a stud in that game for them, for the Seahawks 2 years ago. So, they were not inept on defense. I mean, on offense, like the Broncos were last night. I guess going back to overall, that's what made that game so hard to watch. You had one offense who just couldn't do it, being the Broncos. And then on the other side, you had an offense that every time they made a play you could have set your watch to it last night. The Panthers pick up 25 yards on a nice pass play, and they're going to jump offsides on the next play, or they're going to take a personal foul. I thought the personal fouls were pretty chintzy last night. I forget who it was on the Panthers that swatted the ball out and got a 15-yarder. And then Aqib Talib's first 15 yards. Yeah, Aqib's
right.
first 15 was just drawn at somebody on the sideline. Like, it's a Super Bowl. I mean, Aqib's second personal foul, forget that new proposed rule. They should have thrown him out for that. I mean, he could have broke his neck. I have never seen such a vicious tackle in my life.
On Corey Brown near the goal line, right? That the one where he grabbed his face mask and basically twisted him around.
I've never seen it look like somebody only wanted to grab the face mask before. Like, usually it looks like they're grabbing for something and like they accidentally grabbed the face mask, and now like, well, I'm not going to let him go, so just twist them down. I mean, Aqib's right arm just shot out right for his face mask, and it was going nowhere else. And he grabbed that thing with the jaws of life, and then just twisted him around. I mean, like I said, Corey Brown's lucky he didn't snap his neck on that play, because that was a vicious play.
Well, Aqib Talib was definitely hopped up. I mean, he was, I think he was responsible for a couple offsides penalties as well, and he's just all over the place. So that, but that's unforgivable. I mean, that's a safety issue. Corey Brown, I think he would have turned the corner and just dove right into the end zone if he didn't do that. Ultimately, it delayed the touchdown by a little bit, but it's terrible. You got to be better than that. You shouldn't be doing things like that. Clearly, is illegal and something that he should. I mean, the amount of injuries that these guys sustain, you don't want to have something like that where you're basically going to injure him by throwing him to the ground by his helmet. I mean, once you get contact with the helmet face mask, you know that you're on the face mask. All right, you gotta let go. You just got to let go. So that, you're right. That one I totally agree with. That was a very poor play. But let's talk about the other side of the ball a little bit here, because, let's not forget the Carolina Panthers defense actually was, for its own actually not that bad. I mean, they actually did. They sacked Peyton Manning 5 times, and they lost 33 yards on those sacks. They were able to recover 1 lost fumble of Peyton Manning. So, I mean, they were doing what they had to do as well on the defensive side. So tell me, what are your thoughts about the Carolina Panthers' defense in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, the defense was legit, and they played a good game. The only thing that they came up short on was that, you know, they've been a defense that's able to produce points, and they really weren't, in this game, unfortunately. I mean, but, I mean, yeah, they were all over the place. They had the interception. Keekly setting the tone early with that hit on Demaryius Thomas. And,
yeah.
The two Denver touchdowns were a strip sack and then the turnover there at the end of the game where Cam Newton decided that he didn't really want to win the Super Bowl. And then they scored. And it's unfortunate. And they probably wouldn't even score a touchdown on that if Josh Norman hadn't held on the play. And, I mean, that ball, I don't know if Peyton was just off because his arm really is that shot or if he was just attempting to sail it out of the back of the end zone. But he
got lucky.
That ball was 15 yards over his head. So there was no need to hold there for Norman. So if he doesn't do that, I mean, they escaped by only giving up 12 points on their side of the ball. It just really came down to that the offense was so bad, it turned negative for Carolina.
Right. You know, and actually what's interesting, so Luke Kuechly was amazing, as we know. I mean, he had seven tackles all on his own. I mean, he had a sack. I mean, he had that big hit on Demaryius Thomas. I mean, he was – as advertised. But you know who I was really impressed with was Thomas Davis. I mean, he was playing with a broken right arm, essentially. Mostly healed, but not really. He was wearing a plastic cast, which I don't know if you heard about this. It actually was a 3D-printed cast for his arm. It was actually the first time they've ever used that kind of technology for anybody who wore anything during an actual live football game. So it was very, it was kind of cutting edge. They've never done that before. But he on his own, he had 5 solo tackles, 7 total tackles on the day. He had a tackle for loss. I mean, with that bad arm, he was actually very active out there. And so I give him a lot of credit. I was very impressed with what he did. And, of course, Kuechly was Kuechly. But, Josh Norman did not play a big part in this game. And ultimately, I understand lining him up for the most part against Demaryius Thomas, I guess. But Emmanuel Sanders was the more dynamic receiver over the last, all through the playoffs and probably near the end of the season as well. What do you think about that? Do you think maybe perhaps they should have switched Josh Norman off at some point and decided to have him shadow Emmanuel Sanders instead of Demaryius Thomas?
Yeah, I think that they could have done that. I think at the end of the day, I don't think it really made that big of a difference because I think that they did play pretty well overall. I think they could have mixed it up, maybe made a little of an adjustment on that, but I think that speaks to something that we haven't really touched on. The bigger thing was that the shortcomings on Carolina did not just come from Cam Newton in that offense last night. That was a coaching meltdown across the board on basically all 3 phases, I think. So, I mean, with the defense being a little bit of an exception, but their special teams weren't good. Their offensive game plan wasn't good, and Ron Rivera burning his second challenge early in that game to get 7 yards on a play.
Yeah. I agree. And you can't be afraid of the Denver offense. You know what I mean? Like that's not a play there. I mean, I understand if Denver's offense from 2 years ago where 7 yards might make a difference because they just score at will, but this is not that. You know, they're not one of the worst offenses in the league. I mean, Peyton Manning had more interceptions than touchdowns during the regular season. So it's not one of those things that you should be fearing, and 7 yards is not worth it. Now, I didn't see any other, with that said, I didn't see any other obvious challenges that I would have wanted to use a red flag on. But you're right. I think that was a little bit of him being frustrated about losing the first challenge and deciding, I'm going to get this one right, instead of thinking of what's best for his team. And that was probably not the right move there. What's interesting, though, is that the reason why I suggested moving Josh Norman over is that nobody else in that receiving core was moving the ball. I mean, if you look at it, Emmanuel Sanders is the only wide receiver or tight end, you know, any receiving option outside of C.J. Anderson who caught more than one ball. That's, you know, it's pretty bad, you know, if you think about it, because the targets were there. It's just that no one could catch the ball. And if Emmanuel Sanders is the only guy moving the ball, and you know, honestly, if you want to break it down, the Denver Broncos offense was really only responsible for maybe 3 points during the game this last night, maybe 6 points. They could have held them a little bit. I mean, outside range a little bit. I mean, three or 6 points makes a difference in a game that's that close. And keep in mind the two touchdowns were really defensive touchdowns. I mean, 14 points really came from the defense because one of them was obviously a defense recovery in the end zone, but the other one was a fumble on the 5-yard line, which, you know, as we talked about now, Peyton needed basically 7 tries to get it into the end zone. So, and it basically was just C.J. Anderson running into a pile until he fell in. So, you know, honestly, that could have been a difference in the game, I think. And I think, actually, they should have switched up their defense a little bit, taken advantage of it, you know, get a better field position, maybe give Cam a truncated book in order to some short slant patterns or something. Don't throw down the field anymore, you know, particularly after Brown went out. So any final thoughts about the Super Bowl? Because we're kind of running short on time now. I know we could talk about this for a long time because there's a lot of things that happened last night that were surprising. But any final thoughts on the Super Bowl?
Yeah, as we're wrapping up 2016 or the 25-2016 season here, we start getting ready to start doing more draft talk and scouting stuff. I want to finish off on the Super Bowl note on a quick 60-second rant on all of you jokers out there. You can't put aside your hate for one day, for one night, to just appreciate the moment of Super Bowl 50, and you're going to boo Tom Brady, and even worse, boo my man Dion Branch. You know, the Brady thing, maybe I somewhat understand it. I still think it's absolutely classless. I think it's ridiculous. That, as I said in the tweet, and I know you liked it last night, that moment was not about the New England Patriots. That was not about Tom Brady or about Dion Branch. That moment was about the league. And that moment was about celebrating the 50th anniversary of the history of the game, and you're talking about the guy who's won the Super Bowl MVP 3 times, and you boo him because you don't like him. It's just, you know, it's not just a bias thing, because if the roles were reversed and Ray Lewis came out last night who haunted the Patriots definitely for the second half of his career, I'd have clapped him. And had it been, you know, Peyton Manning walk out there, I would cheer him and clap him. You know, I've come around. I rooted for him last night. I actually was glad that Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl, so maybe my levels of understanding and appreciating a moment and respecting the game is you know, a little bit higher level than the people that were sitting in the stands last night at Levi's Stadium. But you know, I personally thought it was embarrassing. Like I said, on a night that wasn't about the Patriots, you reminded everybody again why the Patriots are so famous and why you guys need us in this league, because everybody needs the bad guy.
Yeah, so, and folks, if Ryan can put aside the fact that Peyton Manning is on the other side there and I can root for Peyton Manning, because I've been to Gillette Stadium when Peyton Manning played there when he was playing for the Colts, it's not pretty. So if Ryan can put that aside and appreciate the bigger picture, then all you guys can all grow up and appreciate a little bit of what Tom Brady has brought to football as a whole. I mean, he is one of the greatest players in NFL history. All right, well, that wraps it up for today's episode. Why don't you give us your Twitter account, Ryan, so people can follow you?
Yep, it's at Ryan Whitfield, N-E, and definitely go follow us and you know, follow the website so that we can get some draft talk going here.
Yeah, so we got a lot of that coming up because the combine coming up at the end of February. So we got lots of things to talk about on the draft front. Follow us at FB Garbage Time on Twitter, and we will give you all the news. And until next time, we're going to break down some news about the off season and hopefully some stuff about the draft and maybe some scouting reports. So don't stay with us throughout the off season because we got all the information you need. And then enjoy the rest of your NFL day.